Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host today, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And it is Wednesday, September 19th, 2018. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy hump day, Melody.
It is that day once again, as it is every Wednesday. And we have Wendy Wilson joining us, as she does every Wednesday also, from Apothecary Herbs. So let's go ahead and get to the market reports today. And gold today, we were able to stay above 1,200, up 520 today, 520 on gold at 1,204. Silver was up 8 cents at $14.32. Another good day for platinum and palladium. Platinum was up $9, and my screen just went blank. Okay, so let's go see where gold is. Here we go. Platinum was up $9 at $826. Don't you hate when that happens? Palladium was up 24, almost a little over 2.3% at 1,043. The USDX today is up 0.9. I'm sorry, down 0.9 at 94.53. Crude oil, big day, up 1.34 at 71.19. The paper markets today, they were all happy about, I guess, what's going on in the markets. There were a couple of good reports out there today. Didn't make sense with everything else, but they were good reports, and the Dow reacted being up 159 points at 26,406. The NASDAQ was down 6 at 7,950, along with the S&P was up 3 at 2,907. And it looks like the 10-year yield is making a pretty strong base at that 3% level. It's 3.08 today, 3.08% on the 10-year yield, and that is up 0.03. So that's kind of interesting, and we'll have to see where it goes from here. Asian European markets were stronger. Confidence is strong. Hey, good day. Everybody be happy. Don't worry. Be happy. That's what they tell us. Don't worry, be happy. So we're going to be happy for this next, the next hour of Financial Survival. Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs. Hello, Wendy.
Hello, Melody, and hello, Dave. I don't hear Dave. Is he
I
there?
Don't either. I don't know.
Hello.
Hey, Dave. We're going to be talking about the euthanasia laws and the organ transplant laws. They're coming up and they're looking to be reviewed. Thought we'd give people a heads up at what could develop. There is this shift, though, in attitude regarding these laws on euthanasia and organ transplant. This is kind of a global development. Parts of Europe have already started to change their policies and their laws regarding ending a person's life and organ transplants. So we're seeing also hospitals and lawmakers in Canada as well as the U.S. starting discussion in changing the strict restrictions on these existing laws. And what's fueling this urgency is, the Organ Transplant Act is about 30 years old, and it's kind of restrictive when it comes to organ donation and transplantation. So these are kind of guiding laws that have been set in place to protect people and patients from being abused. So the discussions by policymakers on these things is that they want to lift the restrictions and reshape the ethics that have been governing the euthanasia and organ transplant area. So human organ transplants actually started in 1954, and then the strict laws governing them were in place by the 70s. So this area of scientific medicine is feeling kind of the pinch because there's been a drop in organ transplants. Organ transplant surgeons and the procurement agencies are kind of suffering because they don't have enough organs that have been donated, and now patients needing organ transplantations, their lists are 5 years or more wait, and so they're looking for ways to change that. Now, countries like Singapore and Australia now have limited payment options for live patient donors to donate organs. So if you wanted to donate a kidney, for instance, you could and get paid for it. So the health insurance industry is also gaining to benefit from this, because if they change the laws governing this area of medicine, euthanized patients, could be used in order to harvest organs. This is mm-hmm. where this is headed. So mm-hmm. a kidney transplant right now would cost about $263,000, and it would extend a person's life roughly 20 years. Compared to that same patient staying on kidney dialysis for about 4 or 5 years, and the cost is $350,000. See what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Money answereth all things, eh? Mm-hmm. Well, if you look at like a heart transplant, you're looking at $1 million.
Oh, so, I have a client who had a heart transplant, and it was more than that.
Right. Well, and then you got to add up also the anti-rejection drugs that the pharmaceutical companies make, and that's six figures a year just to stay on those.
And he told me, the one gentleman that had the heart transplant that was there with him, his bill was over $6 million.
Yeah, it can get up there.
Yeah.
So the current laws are really in place to prohibit patient preferences, or maybe the black market, protect people from becoming victims of an industry that stands to make a lot of money on organ transplants. So organ harvesting also has these strict protocols under the current laws where patients or a legal representative, a family representative, has to give consent in writing in order for organ donation to happen. Now, Congress amended the National Organ Transplantation Act in 1984, making it a crime if hospitals or anyone were to harvest human organs for the purpose of financial gain outside of the laws, and the prohibiting laws, and also paying cash for organs is prohibited under the current laws. So why would the medical system want to change the laws on organ transplants? One reason is organ donors, after they die, could have family that legally block the harvesting of the organs. So that's been a problem as well. Okay. Now, in the United States, it's been established that hospitals must have what is called informed consent from a patient or a donor or a family member before they harvest organs. And informed consent is really a legal declaration of the donor's wishes. However, there is this push to change that to what is called implied consent. And some countries have already switched over to implied consent, like Argentina, Australia, Brazil, Chile, and even Denmark. So switching to implied consent is a plan to narrow the gap between supply and demand on those human organs. So in the countries with implied consent, it means that after a person dies, the organs can be harvested. End of story.
Wow.
All right. So notice that's after death.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm about to say next is scary. Okay. the new strategies that are in development that would give physicians and even lawyers that are in charge of a patient's estate the ability to donate organs and skip the payment for the organ issue entirely. So they want to, cut to the chase. So this concept seems to be well received, especially when it involves certain patients, patients with chronic illnesses, patients with mental illnesses, or the elderly. So we're delving into an area where society is actually calculating a person's worth with regards to serving society. And if it's determined that your care would be too expensive, they are pushing for the option to end your life and to sell your organs. Any questions?
Absolutely none.
Well, let me get to the Massachusetts Medical Society, because the heavyweights there are bent on rescinding the restrictions on the euthanasia law. So in September of this year, they held a meeting, and they wanted to vote regarding euthanasia or end-of-life care. And keep in mind that this is just policy. It's not legislative law at this point, but it's the first step to pressure politicians to make changes to current laws state by state. So this is how it's going to get done. Vermont's Medical Society has also taken this stance, and they passed what is called the Death with Dignity Bill in 2013, which allows physicians to prescribe the terminally ill a lethal dose of drugs to end that person's life. California, Colorado, Oregon, Washington State, and Washington, D.C. have similar laws, and Montana allows euthanasia through their state Supreme Court. So they want to rescind these long-held opposition laws for the doctor-assisted suicide and organ transplants, and they're going to try to get it done state by state. So what we're witnessing is really this major shift to drop those formal ethical positions and push it to to more of a state decision, rather than a family or a decision. And medical insurance companies probably going to have some lobbyists work on that as well. What I wanted to talk to you about was what Cambridge University in 2017, they actually analyzed the cost of healthcare and compared it to euthanasia. And what they found is for the category of the critically ill patients, it costs a fortune to take care of them with very little benefit, according to the report. And it costs about $82,845 to almost $200,000 for each year of life on the critically ill. So, if you're falling into categories like this and they change the laws, you're going to have a big target on you.
Your history. But, when you're critically ill like that, they give these ranges for 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, but you usually don't last 3 years. If you're critically ill, it's a relatively short period of time.
And I've known patients that have gotten the critically ill, you got 6 months, 8 months, a year to live, and they've checked out of the hospital and they've gone and found other ways to deal with their illness, and they've lived years.
Yeah.
All right, now in September 2018, there was this article in the New England Journal of Medicine. It was a discussion. This is the scary, chilling talk I want to tell you about. There was this discussion they had on harvesting organs from euthanized patients. And what they were suggesting is harvesting may be done prior to death. Okay,
what?
Yeah. Yeah, this is from professional Ian Ball. He's and also Robert Sibbard and Robert Trong. This is New England Journal of Medicine. This was their discussion on euthanasia and organ donation. Quote, "There is an option of donating as many organs as possible, and it is in the best condition as possible. So the rules of harvesting after death could interfere with the ability of obtaining organ procurement. In such cases, it may be preferable to procure the organs in the same way that we are procuring them from brain dead patients using general anesthesia, for patient comfort. So doing so would require an amendment to the criminal code, making organ donation an acceptance for a cause of death."
Jeez.
I know. Doctors are promoting organ donation via euthanasia as a, I read that several times just to make sure I got it. I was just like, it was blowing my mind. Here's a quote from Ryan Anderson, a physician. He's with the Euthanasia Prevention Coalition. He says, "Physician-assisted suicide, or euthanasia, endangers the weak, corrupts medicine, compromises the family, and violates human dignity and equality. Medicine is permitting tools for healing to be used as techniques for killing. Euthanasia will most threaten the weak and marginalized," end of quote. Well, if it's $1 million heart, your history, Melanie. I'm saying? Well, you take that heart. This reminds me.
It's not even that. Look at families.
Yeah.
Because I hate to say it, but heirs, they're not very nice sometimes.
Especially if Aunt May is standing in the way of a big estate and payout.
Yep.
But this talk of, making organ donation an acceptable cause of death. It reminds me of the Mayans. They would just drug your ass and rip your heart out, you know, if they wanted to. That's what they did. They sacrificed you on the altar of whatever god they had there. But they drugged you first so you wouldn't resist, and they just ripped your heart out. And that's what this is. They're going to medicate people. They're going to give them anesthesia. And notice they already do that for brain dead people. Now, when I worked at the hospital, I knew this as a fact. It was kind of creepy. If you were young and you came in with a head trauma, you had a big target on your back for organ harvesting.
Yeah.
And what the hospital staff would do was try to separate the parents and get one of them to sign okay for organ harvesting. They only needed one parent signature.
Wow.
Right. So I hate to say it, though, these days being an organ donor really means, you know, if you got that on your driver's license.
I never have that on my driver's license.
I know.
Ever.
Well, let's say you just had a little, you know, traffic accident, nothing major, but you needed, you know, you had a few broken bones. Here you are, an organ donor. I mean, and you know,
and your organs happen to match up with somebody who's a multi-billionaire.
Well, somebody upstairs needs a heart, and you're the right blood type.
Yep.
I worry about that stuff. So working in hospitals, I knew there was problems there. So medicine, you know, in regards to this organ harvesting, is really working in this direction of no informed consent, no written authorization, and perhaps not even a pronouncement of death before taking someone's organs. And this is just unacceptable to me. So once blood flow and oxygen ceases, the tissue starts to degrade. So they want to use the anesthesia to take it before that happens, because they want organs in what is called a fresh state.
Hmm.
So,
and then you'll start seeing panels pop up, you know, to where thinking that they can make these decisions and so forth. And it's just, you know, what a road that we're going down.
Well, I know. And so you've got, you know, like I said, you've got, okay, the insurance companies. Obviously, let's say you've got, you know, some sort of illness that's going to take a long treatment, lots of protocols, it's going to cost a lot of money, and, you know, maybe you're over 50 or you're reaching 60 years of age. They're going to do an algorithm thing. They're going to plug you into a computer code, and they're going to decide, okay, so here's your life value over here, and here's someone over here much younger that needs, let's say, your kidneys.
We are already beginning to see programs popping up and articles from these technology companies saying that they could determine, you know, what age you're going to live to. I mean, that's already being done.
Yeah, there's a lot of predictive medicine going on. What was it? The spit test. Now they can determine through saliva spit now if you're high risk of having stroke and heart attack. So I don't know. My perspective of medicine, you know, I think trauma care is, you know, fine, but, you know, everything else is kind of moving in such a dark side. I just see Satan using something good for evil. You know what I mean?
And absolutely, as we see healthcare costs continue to rise, and you know, entitlements, they're looking to cut the entitlements and so forth. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be embraced. I don't know if it's going to be embraced, but it's going to be a little more easier to push, because everybody's saying, well, yeah, we you know, those useless eaters, you know, we don't need them anymore. So, yeah, okay.
Well, I mean, seriously, in that algorithm, they're going to check your educational level and your occupation and what you would make throughout your lifetime. And it's all going to factor in as to, you know, who they're going to save and who they're not.
Gives mandatory retirement a whole new meaning, doesn't it?
Well, Social Security won't have to worry, obviously.
Yeah,
sure.
Well,
give us your number, Wendy.
Oh, sure. Apothecary Herbs, toll-free, 866-229-3663, thepowerherbs.com. Keep your original organs healthy, folks. Do your organ cleansing.
There you go. Give her a call, ladies and gentlemen. 866-229-3663. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host today, Dave Allen. And we're going to continue with the 90% silver, $25 face value, along with a 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle. And your total cost on that is $425, and that does include your shipping cost. So you could purchase one or 100.
Phenomenal.
90% silver is just a great way for any emergencies in the future. It's a great way to get low-cost insurance, or I should say low-cost silver and insurance. And it's a great product to have during the times that we're going to be facing. So take advantage of the low prices in silver. And, of course, gold. You get your 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle in there with that package. $425. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And I'm just tickled pink that we've been seeing just a tremendous growth in our numbers coming from the website for folks signing up. So I want to thank each and every one of you for doing so. And we'll continue to provide you with information on those newsletters that you just, you know, it's just a little different perspective on things and news where you don't hear it anywhere else. So, let's see. What else do we want to talk about?
Nukes. No nukes.
No nukes. I did see this where North Korea agreed today where they're going to permanently abolish its key missile facilities in the presence of foreign experts. What do you think about that? And
even
it's also... And it's also willing to close its main nuclear complex if the U.S. takes an unspecified reciprocal action. Speaking at a joint news conference in Pyongyang, South Korean President Moon Jae-in and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un had said that they agreed to turn the Korean Peninsula into a land of peace without nuclear weapons and threats. It's a beautiful thing. The third summit this year between the leaders of the two Koreas, was aimed at improving ties between the hostile neighbors. Kim said he will visit Seoul by the end of the year in what would be the first ever visit to the South capital by the North Korean leader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the spot where Todd cues Somewhere Over the Rainbow, I believe. Melody.
Okay.
Even though North Korea's unilaterally stopped nuclear and missile tests, It hasn't allowed for international inspections to date, you know, and that's drawn criticism that, you know, its actions couldn't be verified and therefore could, you know, easily be hidden or reversed. You know, Moon of South Korea said that as a next step, North Korea will allow experts from concerned countries, presumably us, namely, to watch the closure of its missile engine testing site and launch pad. Presume Japan is involved in that as well. And China, of course. The North also expressed its readiness to take additional measures, such as a permanent dismantlement of its main nuclear facilities, should there be corresponding measures from the U.S. That term is unspecified as of right now. But, you know, North Korea has consistently refused to give up its nuclear arsenal unilaterally and stressed that any formal declaration to end the Korean War should come first. You know, satellite photos and other evidence in recent months have suggested that North Korea is continuing to work on its nuclear program secretly, and today's agreement falls short of what U.S. officials have demanded from the North.
You know what, this, I don't get this part, because, and the U.S., I believe, has said they would not go along with it. Both the North and the South adopted a separate military accord because technically they're still at war, because the war ended with a truce, not a peace treaty. So what's the big deal? Why don't they just do a peace treaty? I mean, and get it done and over with.
Well, I think that's what, you know, certainly the South wants. I believe Japan is a big, Shinzo Abe has talked pretty vocally about that as well. You know, I don't know what the vagaries of that particular piece are, but
You know, on Monday we talked about how the China could hurt U.S. gas industry. We do talk a lot about the trade disputes here on this program. We do this not because they're in the headlines, but because they're one of the events that could cause the next financial crisis. And of course, that's a good thing for gold and silver. And we did report on Monday on the rapid rise and quickly reversing course of the fracking impact on the U.S. natural gas and oil boom. And this was in the article that appeared in Monday's Monday's American Survival newsletter. The U.S. shale oil and particularly gas have been performing strongly, at least in terms of their volume output. But it's still teetering on a cliff because of this massive amount of debt that the companies have taken on to build their operations. In fact, after more than a decade in business, a lot of these companies have yet to turn a profit. So now you have the IEA, the International Energy Agency, that is saying that a trade war with China and a lack of investment projects in the sector could be economically disruptive. So,
yeah, I suspect that that term economically disruptive is a euphemism for, you know, something much stronger. One that in my own mind could spell the demise of the fracking industry. You know, the booming demand for liquefied natural gas in Asian markets, especially China, I mean, obviously that can mean massive business for U.S. gas exporters. Energy industry forecasters predict a global demand for 500 million tons of LNG, liquefied natural gas, by 2030. You know, the lion's share of that demand is going to come from Asia's emerging economies, but, you know, in particular, from China. You know, and that's going to fuel China's growth plan, you know, as Xi Jinping has developed with his ruling Communist Party. You know, in fact, 45% of China's natural gas is said, you know, they're going to have to import it. And the U.S. is expected to supply a vast amount of that need. But, you know, like any big things, you know, major bottlenecks in export capacity now lie ahead for this, you know, very and ambitious goal, you know, to global trade tensions and a lack of capital investment for these export infrastructure projects.
Well, you know, we're now we're supposed to be the largest exporter. And we still don't know. I mean, as you know, with the amount of debt that they're carrying, we don't know how many of these gas companies will even be around in a few years. Mm-hmm. Again, they're unsustainable debt levels, and we're seeing these rates rise. And studies are showing that this fracking is not good for air and water quality, and it also could cause earthquakes. The White House's announcement that the U.S. is raising tariffs on an additional $200 billion worth of Chinese goods does not bode well for prospects for trade. So we have, you know, we're looking at things. You have the markets are sort of predicting things will get worse before they get better in the trade tariff retaliation game between the two largest economies. So if the U.S. LNG can't get into Chinese ports, the gas industry is looking at a big problem. And, you know, I did see a report this morning, Dave, that China came out and said that they wouldn't do anything against the dollar, which I don't believe at all, but that's what they said. I don't know who would believe that. China's going to do whatever they're going to do to protect their country, just like, you know, we do whatever we need to do to protect our country. And, you know, so they said they wouldn't tinker with the treasuries and you know, and so forth. They wouldn't manipulate their currencies. Well, they already have. So it's just...
They're being overly coy, you know, mincing words.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way that they're not going to, you know, go after the dollar. Perhaps not directly, but well.
Although, you know, what I don't understand, and I was hearing today, and I didn't go into it, maybe I don't know if you have the answer to this or not. Maybe this is just the first knee-jerk reaction. Because every time we hear about tariffs, we hear about how much more it's going to cost, you know, the American consumer. You know, that is just going to raise prices, and you know, these multinational corporations are and they're not going to absorb the increase, so that will trickle down. Well, I'm hearing today, like on few food products and some other products, that the prices are actually being lowered, like soybean, because you know, now China's buying their soybeans from someplace else, or a large part of them. They're not committed to the same amount to the United States, so the prices have actually been dropping. So, yes, it's still going to hurt the farmers, but what happens to the consumer? Do they continue to pay the same high price in order to justify the drop in price to the farmer? Or does that price, how does that price become negotiated in the future? Or we just have to wait and see?
I think we have to wait and see. I mean, I think what we're seeing now is just a short-term, I don't know if you call it an anomaly, but you know, I think the proof in the pudding is going to be if there's a sustained trade war. Let's see what's going on next year at this time. You know, and I think then we'll have more answers to the whys.
We know there was a start of a second round of trade talks between Japan and the United States. That's going to be delayed until after fresh tariffs imposed on China by the United States come into force on September 24th. So you have the talks between Japan's economy minister and the U.S. Trade representative Robert Lighthizer. That's all been scheduled for September 21st. But now they delayed it by at least 3 or 4 days, maybe even longer. So Japan's president or prime minister and President Donald Trump are expected to meet on the sidelines of a UN General Assembly next week. And we can't forget about that. That's going to be interesting to see and listen to President Trump's speech next week at the UN.
Yeah, well, we are reading that Abe wants to avert steep tariffs on its car exports. And, you know, at the same time, fend off U.S. demands for a bilateral free trade agreement that could force it, China, to open sensitive markets such as agriculture. And I suspect that's what Abe and Trump, with some of their senior respective senior officials nearby will talk about in the sidelines next week. You know, Japan apparently wants to persuade the U.S. instead to rejoin the multilateral Trans-Pacific Partnership. You know, Japanese policymakers yesterday called for a quick end to the U.S.-Japan trade war to avoid damaging the global economy. Japan, by the way, is the third largest economy in the world, I believe.
Yeah, and then you have Europe, and of course, you know, they're doing the same thing. So we basically have these, I don't know if they're wars yet. I don't consider them wars, but negotiations, I guess, between China, Japan, Europe, Canada. And I tried to find out some information on NAFTA, the new agreement on NAFTA. I kind of was looking for information to see what the final updates on that were, and I couldn't find anything. So,
That's because I suspect there aren't any, that those final details are still being worked out.
Yeah, I couldn't find anything. And anyway, and I couldn't find much on Canada either, so it's kind of a little bit of a hush-hush. And again, they're running out of time, though, because that new president takes over, Obrador. He comes in, and isn't it Obrador, or was that the old one going out?
No, Obrador is the new one.
Obrador is the new one. He's coming in, and they had, 90 days prior to his inauguration as the president of Mexico. So time is running out for them.
Mm-hmm.
Also, British Foreign Secretary Jeremy Hunt said that the UK will flourish with or without an agreement on its relationship with the European Union after it leaves next year. He says a no-deal Brexit is possible. He says, but he doesn't think it's in anyone's interest for that to happen. So they're cautiously optimistic that they will get a deal, but there's a lot of work that they still have to do. You have the British Prime Minister, Theresa May. She's traveling to Austria today to meet with other EU leaders, and she really needs to win over both the European Union and the critics of her Brexit proposal within her own party. And they have until March 29th.
Yeah, boy, that'll come quickly too.
Yeah.
Now, a top European Union official did warn in a letter last week, I believe, to EU leaders who are attending the summit that Britain and the EU could fail to reach an agreement. You know, the EU Council Prez Donald Tusk wrote that unfortunately, no deal scenario is still quite possible. But if we all act responsibly, we can avoid catastrophe. So they're using some stark language. Tusk, who's going to chair this meeting, he wants all the 27 leaders, you know, minus Theresa May, to reach agreement on the terms of a text outlining their future relations with Britain after Brexit has been finalized. And again, Hunt said the UK will flourish and prosper as one of the strongest economies in the world, whatever the outcomes of these talks. Hunt noted the UK's business-friendly environment and strong universities. And he also defended May's government, her proposed Brexit deal, which has been roundly attacked by Hunt's predecessor, good old Boris Johnson.
Well, you know, it kind of makes you wonder, does the UK need the European Union, or does the European Union need the UK? And I think the European Union needs the UK more than the UK needs the EU, and particularly since the UK doesn't do transactions in the euro. They kept their own currency. They didn't join their monetary policy, and I think that's what really will save the UK. If, quote unquote, it can be saved from the amount of stimulus and debt everybody has anyway. So we're going to be heading into our break today. We'll be right back right after these few short messages. Please stay with us.
Each and every heart is Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, 90% silver, 50-cent pieces, a 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle, $425, includes all your shipping costs, and the gold and silver, of course. And you can buy one or 100 of these packages. They're readily available, and but you have to give us a call, and we'll get them shipped right out to you. I saw this interesting. You have mortgage apps were up last week as rates rise. See, we do report good news, ladies and gentlemen. I look for good news. But we also like to bring you reality with the good news, too. Interest rates for home loans are climbing, and that could be what's getting borrowers back to their brokers, fears that rates could move up. As we're seeing in the coming months, we have another Fed meeting here in a week. So I don't think he's going to raise rates. Everybody thinks that they will. But if that 3% stays up above 3, they're not going to raise rates, I don't think. But anyway, total mortgage application volume increased 1.6% last week compared with the previous week. And, of course, this is all according to the Mortgage Bankers Association. And the refinance volume led the charge, rising 4% for the week, although it was 39% lower compared with the same week 1 year ago. And a year ago, last week, rates were nearly a full percentage point lower. So how do you think this is all going to be when we, if, you know, even though if they don't raise rates this year, or I mean this month, and at the end of the year, they raise them the first of the year, I mean, rates are still going higher. The average contract interest for the 30-year fixed rate mortgage rose to its highest level in more than 7 years at 4.88%. So.
This is a time to have good credit, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, is it
avoid,
a
fluke? Avoid debt and pay your bills.
Absolutely, and buy gold and silver.
Indeed. What did you ask?
Are these reports a fluke? Is it timing with the months? Or are people seeing rates rising and they want to get in there?
I think the latter. I think, you know, it is a fluke for that reason, though, that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. I mean, I that's a gut feeling. It's not based on you know, any survey, consumer surveys, but it does make sense, doesn't it?
It does.
That particularly with, you know, with the focus, you know, by banks on, you know, and in the financial world of, you know, the likelihood, the presumption that the Fed is going to raise next week. Heck, you know, if I'm looking at refinancing anyway, geez, why not do it now before it goes up another 0.25%? But you're right, too. I mean, in reality, you know, with the 10-year already over 3 and continuing to inch higher for now, you know, begs the question, is it necessary, you know, to keep a lid on inflation?
And you know what's fascinating about this report? Then we're going to move on, and we're just going to talk briefly about the tax cuts. When you think about it, the refinance volume led the charge, but it was 39% lower. That's almost 50% lower than compared with the same week 1 year ago.
Rates were a lot lower, though, last year, right?
Yeah, but still, that's a big number.
It is a big number.
It's a big number. Let's go ahead and talk about some tax cuts. Are we going to keep them?
Well, we mentioned this briefly last week, but, you know, wearing his Captain Obvious hat this morning, you know, Congress's top tax writer, Representative Kevin Brady of Texas, said that the Senate's unlikely to pass the GOP's latest tax legislation before the midterms, even if, as planned, you know, the House votes and passes the measure. There are actually three of them by the end of September. You know, House and Ways Means Committee Chair said that, you know, time is short before the election to approve bills his party has dubbed Tax Cuts 2.0. You know, both the contentious confirmation process for Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh and challenges and overall in getting Democratic support makes passage a huge problem in the Senate. Brady thinks the Senate will start considering the tax proposals after November's elections, in what we know could turn out to be a very contentious lame duck session if Democrats take control of the House and possibly even the Senate, which would take effect next year, obviously.
Mm-hmm. I don't think that's going to happen, but they're all acting like idiots, and I don't think they're going to take control of anything, but we'll have to wait and see. So it's going to add a lot of debt, and I don't think they're going to make them permanent anyway, so but you know, we'll see. Usually, Dave, we have our brevity is golden. That is your, I don't know what you want to call it. I don't want to say baby, but it is your brevity is golden.
And I'll call it a grandchild.
Okay. And we're going to focus on ranch dressing. Come on, Dave, tell us about it. Do you like ranch dressing? Is that your favorite?
Now we'll get to that.
Okay.
We'll get to that. You know, in today's New York Times, Julia Moskin writes about how one creamy, peppery salad dressing became America's favorite flavor. You know, it's a combination of creaminess from buttermilk, sour cream, sometimes mayo, herbaceousness, to use Ms. Moskin's words, often parsley, thyme, dill, plus a long pull of allium, which is a combination of onion and garlic. And, last but not least, a big shot of pepper. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, ranch dressing. You know, as a young republic, you may not know this, our nation embraced the dressings of many lands along with gold and silver, Italian, French, Russian, and the magical Thousand Islands, which used to be my favorite, by the way, Melody.
I think mine too.
Yeah, but with the creation and rise of ranch, Ms. Moskin believes we've forged the one true American dressing. Invented in the 1950s, ranch is now far and away the most popular salad dressing in the country, at least according to a study done recently by the Association for Dressing and Sauces. They probably have a big office on K Street in Washington. Oh, my word. 40%, 4 out of 10 Americans, 2 in 5, named ranch as their favorite dressing. Its nearest competitor, Italian, came in second at 10%. And it has spread far beyond salad. You know, it's now a routine dip for chicken wings, baby carrots, French fries, tortilla chips, and mozzarella sticks. Steve Henson, a plumber from the tiny village of Thayer, Nebraska, came up with the dressing mix back in 1950, or right around there, during a stint in Anchorage, Alaska, as a construction worker, where he also served as an occasional cook for the crew. By 1954, he and his wife Gail had moved to California, where they bought a ramshackle property called Sweetwater Ranch above Santa Barbara, California. They renamed it Hidden Valley. Name sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
And opened it as a guest ranch. They had a steakhouse, and their favorite topping was, you know, these dry ingredients. Which later, you know, people started carrying home in mayonnaise jars, and voila, you know, they started packaging, the dry ingredients that was then sent and to customers all across the country. Except it didn't go. The ranch madness didn't go national until 1986 with the introduction of Cool Ranch Doritos. You know, those tortilla chips that are infused with a distinctly creamy, oniony bite. Now, I admit, Melody, sightings of ranch-flavored soda, ranch fountains at parties, ranch tattoos, and videos of superfans pouring it on ramen noodles and ice cream, that's a bit too far for even me. I don't know about you, Melody, but my favorite dressings are now classic Caesar and creamy peppercorn, kind of an offshoot of traditional ranch. But my daughter, who's a big fan of ranch dressing drizzled over her sushi snacks, would beg to disagree. What do you think, Melody? What's your favorite?
I remember when you used to do ranch, you actually got a glass jar, and it was dry, and you poured it in there. And then
I remember that.
Do you remember that?
And I do.
Shook it.
Sort of like a DIY ranch.
But that was ranch dressing, wasn't it?
Indeed. Yeah. That's how it got its commercial start. But in any event, Melody, that is this week's Brevity is Golden. Thank you, listeners, for your interest.
Well, you know what? I don't know if listeners are interested about salad dressing. But it is interesting how things get started and everything. But I remember as a child, I think you're right. Thousand Island was my, you know, when I was young. Then I converted to blue cheese. And then I converted to ranch. And then oil and vinegar and you know, the vinaigrettes that you have now. And then I went through a phase of no salad dressings. And now it's pretty much, Caesar, like you. And I still do a little blue cheese and still my oil and vinegar. So anyway.
Fun stuff.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, feel free to, post your favorite dressings on our Facebook page at DGS Coins.
There you go. There you go. Well, this is kind of interesting. 2048 sounds like so far away. Not sure we'll see it. We should see 2048, don't you think?
Well, I'm probably going to have to get my
treadmill out.
Well, I'm not. Yeah, but you know, I'm okay there. I think I think I better get rid of my organ donor designation, though, on my license plate. It sounds like after listening to Wendy.
You better. But it's interesting because the U.S. government is $21 trillion in debt. Already more than 100% of the GDP, and now we're going to be adding an average of more than $1 trillion a year to that gross debt. And if you stay on that path that we're currently on, the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, is projecting that our national debt is going to reach $99 trillion by 2048 if nothing changes. Well, you know, things change. So if we're still functioning, that $99 trillion, because we know there's changes and they're always wrong with projecting the, you know, the future of the debt, that's probably $199 trillion. But the CBO deficit and debt projections tend to be, you know, overly optimistic, as I just said. And the reality, of course, we know is going to be much worse than that. So in our endless greed, we are literally destroying America. And emergency action does need to be taken, and if we're going to survive. And it's not us, it's the children and the grandchildren that live during those times.
Yeah, it's nuts. I mean, you know, that means we continue to steal more than $100 million from future generations of Americans every single hour of every single day. Let me repeat that. $100 million from future generations of Americans every single hour of every single day. You know, a year ago, our national debt was at $20.1 trillion, give or take. You know, meaning we've added, you know, $1.3 trillion to the debt over the past 12 months. And as Melody indicated, easily another $1 trillion plus per year. As that, you know, quickly escalates. That's insanity.
It is. And I don't think people really understand how much debt is $1 trillion and how difficult it is to pay it off and how difficult it is just to pay the interest. And we're talking about, you know, 20, 21, 22, 23, $99 trillion. In 2048.
Well, what that doesn't say to Melody is that's astounding in and of itself. But and I don't know what it is and can't think off the top of my head of how it would equate. But if you think in terms of the annual budgets, the interest to pay that debt,
yeah,
probably every bit is nuts. I mean, it's going to crowd out investments for any social programming. Think of what the pressure it's going to put on our defense, national security spending, and in turn, the pressure it's going to put on tax rates. It's going to be crazy.
Well, forget about all that. What about just of our infrastructure? Infrastructure is already crumbling. That means no money to schools, no money to roads, no money to, you know, improve our power grids, no money to build refineries, no money to do this. You know, we subsidize every stinking business out there. You know, we borrow to pay the interest, and yet everybody thinks this is grand, great. But it
don't turn your heads, ladies and gentlemen. Demand a change.
It was a great show today. I want to thank Wendy Wilson for joining us today. You can call at 866-229-3663 and discount code diesel 1-800-375-4188. Dave, thank you for joining me today. I'll be back tomorrow with Butch Paul. Until then, be safe. Good night and God bless.
Bye-bye.